Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
As a reminder, March represents the second estimate of winter wheat planted acreage for the 2026 crop year.
Anthony Prilliman is chief of the crops branch for the National Ag Statistics Service, NAS.
Our initial estimate was published in January based on the data we collected in December. Planted area is now estimated at 32.4 million acres. That is down 1.8% or 580,000 acres from the January estimate and down 2.2% from the previous season. Looking at winter wheat acreage across time, you can see how 2026 compares to the previous nine seasons. And this does represent the third consecutive year of decreased acres.
So those are the wheat numbers, but what about the shifting acres? Fewer corn and more soybeans and cotton. Again, all according to USDA's Prospective Plantings Report. Corn planted area estimated 95.3 million acres, down 3% from last year. Bean acreage expected to increase 4% to 84.7 million. USDA data showing corn acreage declines or holds steady across most major producing states. It reflects changing economics and rotational decisions. Bean acres increasing in key states, including Iowa, Kansas, and Nebraska, signaling a shift toward crops with potentially lower input costs and different market opportunities. Cotton moving in the opposite direction. Total planted area, 9.64 million acres. That's up 4% from last year, with increases in major producing states like Texas, up 4%. Georgia growing more, but Pima or extra long staple acreage projected to be lower. U.S. grain stocks are building across major crops, with corn, soybean, and wheat inventories all higher than a year ago. That, again, according to USDA's latest grain stocks report. The corn stocks, 9.02 billion bushels as of March 1st. That's up 11% from last year. Bean stocks, 2.1 billion bushels, up 10%. And wheat stocks increasing 5% to 1.3 billion bushels. Corn supply showing a notable shift toward on-farm storage. Farm-held stocks jumped 21% to 5.43 billion bushels. New federal biofuel mandates set to increase demand for U.S. crops, providing stronger market support for corn and bean producers over the next 2 years. Environmental Protection Agency finalizing its Renewable Fuel Standard Set 2 rule, establishing 2026 and 2027 blending requirements at the highest levels in program history. Rule maintains a 15 billion gallon conventional biofuel target, supporting ethanol demand while significantly expanding biodiesel and renewable diesel requirements. EPA estimates that biodiesel and renewable diesel use will need to rise by more than 60% from levels of 2025, and that increase is expected to drive additional demand for soybean oil and other feedstocks, strengthening prices, supporting farm income. USDA has an estimate that that rule could add $3 to $4 billion in net farm income, generating $31 billion in crop value tied to biofuel production. It's Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
When we talk about selection for extremes, we're basically saying we're identifying a trait and we're trying to select for either the maximum or minimum value of it we possibly can.
Dr. Mark Johnson is Oklahoma State Extension Beef Breeding Specialist.
We know we've got effective tools that we can use, things like a Cavanese Direct EPD or a Birthweight EPD that we can use as selection tools to identify bulls that are going to give us Cavanese, particularly when we mate them to first calf heifers. So the question, can selection for extremes be taken too far when it comes to Cavanese? Well, the short answer, yes. We know that lighter birthweight calves are more likely to be born unassisted, less likely to have calving difficulty. The flip side of that coin, there tends to be less vigor, there's higher mortality rate, and those calves don't grow as well long term when they're extremely small at birth. Calving ease is best thought of as a threshold trait. When we get to the level we're trying to achieve, an unassisted birth and a vigorous calf that's up and nursing, we've reached the desired objective of selecting for calving ease. And we want to manage and select for it accordingly when we think about that. Nobody wants to have to pull calves. That being said, when we think about calving out heifers, it's a prudent management practice to monitor, be there for supervision. We know that about 5% of all calves are going to have an abnormal presentation. There could be something come up aside from just the size of that calf that requires our management during calving season. I encourage you, as you're looking for calving ease bulls right now, take a look at past production records. Take a look at the past EPDs for things like Calving Ease Direct and Birthweight of the sires of previous calf crops, and use those things as a guide to figure out how much selection pressure to apply to calving ease. And while this always potentially leads to the greatest genetic change, if we take it too far, we can create some biological extremes that the environment tends to revolt against, or maybe unlock some genetic antagonisms that aren't really good for profit potential in beef production.
Well, let's go from beef to pork. Matt Erickson, senior analyst at Terrain.
Pork producer margins continue to hold firm and will likely remain favorable over the next 12 months. While fundamentals remain supportive of strong margins, with low feed costs, tight cold storage, and strong exports, proactive margin protection is warranted as trade uncertainty, supply, and market sentiment evolve. Profitability across the hog sector remains resilient. Iowa State University estimates February fair-to-finish returns at $15.62 per head, extending the industry's profitability streak to 23 consecutive months. Margins continue to run well above seasonal norms, particularly when viewed against the 5-year at negative $1.72 per head and 10-year at $2.06 per head February averages. Based on futures pricing as of March 11th, margin prospects remain attractive. I project weaned to finish margins to average better than $32 per head in quarter 2 2026 and over $28 per head over the next 12 months. Farrow to finish margins to average over $42 per head in quarter 2 and exceed $35 per head on a full year basis. Disease-related supply constraints are also pushing weaned pig prices higher, with values still running approximately 65% above year-ago levels, a cost that some producers will need to continue monitoring.
It's Agriculture Today.
Introducing the heavyweight champion of the livestock operation, Case IH Farmall Utility Series Tractors.
Farmall Utility Tractors don't just outweigh the competition. They're engineered to distribute weight where it works, from the transmission, central housing, and axles to the differentials and final drives. So add some weight to your operation and go the distance with Farmall Utility Tractors.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
This is Ben Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
This is Agriculture Today.
We have some frameworks, which are essentially deals still in progress, outlines of a deal, and there's a handful of those underway still.
Shauna Morris is Executive Vice President for Trade Policy with the National Milk Producers Federation.
But most importantly, across that finish line of negotiations, we by now have 10 reciprocal trade agreements with various countries from Latin America to Europe to Asia. And I'd say a couple of those in particular boil to the top in terms of upshots for U.S. dairy. One of those is Indonesia. Indonesia has already been a top 10 market for exports. And that's with our exporters battling uphill against a tariff disadvantage they have compared to suppliers from Australia and New Zealand. And another is Taiwan. Taiwan's our biggest export market right now for extended shelf life milk. It's a really high value product, also a key market for cheeses. Both of those are new reciprocal trade agreements. Both of those see tariffs zeroing out entirely once they get implemented, and a whole host of new non-tariff barrier benefits, from dealing with common cheese name protections to ensuring that facility registrations can be done smoothly, to guarding against future certificate changes. So on the whole, a lot of good stuff coming down the pipe. These are fantastic announcements, really great terms of the deals that have been landed, but all of them are still in the implementation phase right now. So for instance, even the earliest agreements that were announced, which were with Malaysia and Cambodia back at the end of October last year, those are still going through the implementation cycle too. And I'd say probably in the timeline we operate in now, this administration seems to do everything very quickly, almost on fast forward. And so it probably feels like there's a lag in actually translating from all of the press releases into things that are going to make a difference on the ground for our exporters.
But if we're talking trade deals, we have to remember USMCA.
One of the biggest challenges and biggest priorities for our trade policy team has been making sure that we're helping to drive a united industry voice around our priorities and messaging on this agreement. I think that it's been vitally important for us that we're making sure to drive home two key points. Number one, USMCA is a very important agreement, in major part because of our trade with Mexico. Mexico is still our number one trading partner, and that is thanks to USMCA and the free flow of dairy trade that we have with them, the deep commercial partnerships that that's let us put in place. We need to make sure that we're not disrupting that. And then number two, at the same time, this review period is a special period. It was a really smart idea for the negotiating team when they were crafting USMCA to build in a mandatory review of how's this been going so far after the first 6 years, and where does it need some tweaking to work the way that it needs to? And certainly some of our issues have fallen into that latter bucket too. Most notably, the dairy commitments that Canada's made, where we continue to see Canada trying to do end runs around those promises to chip away at the access and commitments that the U.S. worked so hard to secure with them. So the other key piece for us is leveraging that unified industry voice and working to help make sure that those topics stay on the administration's short list for key priorities to address in this review. There's a lot of different voices out there now saying, me too, me too. How about this brand new topic? I think dairy is a little different in that we've been consistently saying from the get-go here, look, these key pieces aren't implementing the way that they were envisioned. They need relooked at and they need some targeted fixes. And so I think that that's been getting through, but certainly it's incumbent upon our industry as a whole to make sure we keep that message up, particularly as we drive through toward July 1st, which is that critical where do we go next from here date this year.
It's Agriculture Today.
Let's talk about supply chains. Each year, Cotton Incorporated's global supply chain marketing team has hundreds of meetings with brands and retailers in all corners of the globe. They're working to find innovative ways to replace synthetic fabrics with natural, sustainable cotton, to expand your customer base and drive more demand. You grow the cotton. The Cotton Research and Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
We like to start by looking at the principal crops total to see that big picture of 2026 planting intentions.
Anthony Prilliman is chief of the crops branch for the National Ag Statistics Service on the latest prospective plantings report.
Now, based on our current estimates, the planted principal crops total for 2026 is estimated at nearly 310 million acres. This is down 0.5% or 1.59 million acres from the 2025 principal crop total. And if realized, this would represent the lowest total since 2020. Now, looking across the country, we see no record highs expected in 2026. But if realized, record lows are anticipated in Connecticut, Georgia, New Hampshire, Rhode Island, and South Carolina. Now, as you can see, in most years, we have seen changes of less than 1% between March and the final, indicating that farmers have a pretty good idea on what their total planted acres will be in March, even though they still may make changes to the specific amounts of acres they plant to the individual crops over the next few weeks and months. However, you will see years on that chart with sharp declines, which are mainly due to weather events like we saw in 2019 that prevented farmers from planting all of their intended acreage. All right, let's now look at today's estimates, and we'll start with corn. Planted acreage in 2026 is estimated at 95.3 million acres. That is down 3.5% or 3.45 million acres from 2025. Now, as you can see, we are estimating declines in four of the top five states, with Kansas being the only exception. Now, looking across the country, you'll see that planted acreage is expected to be down or unchanged in 37 of the 48 estimating states. Acreage decreases of 300,000 or more are expected in Illinois, Iowa, Minnesota, Nebraska, North Dakota, South Dakota, and Wisconsin. Record high planted acres are expected in Nevada and Washington, and then record lows are expected in several northeastern states, including Connecticut, Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, and Rhode Island. Now, as you can see, the NAS forecast falls within the range of expectations, but is higher than most had anticipated. All right, looking at soybeans, planted acreage is estimated at 84.7 million acres. This is up 4.3% or nearly 3.49 million acres from the previous season. We are estimating acreage increases in all the top five soybean states. Planting intentions are up or unchanged in 20 of the 29 estimating states. Increases of 300,000 acres or more are anticipated in Arkansas, Iowa, Kansas, Mississippi, Nebraska, South Dakota, and Wisconsin. And then if realized, the planted area in Wisconsin will be the largest on record for that state. Today's soybean planted estimate is within the range of expectations. However, it is lower than most had anticipated. If you look across the country, you're going to see a record high combined corn and soybean acres in Kansas, Nevada, and Washington. All right, next we'll look at U.S. cotton acres. Planted acreage is estimated at 9.64 million acres. This is up 3.9% or nearly 385,000 acres from 2025. Now, looking at cotton acreage over time, even though planted acreage is expected to be up from last year, it still represents the second lowest level on this chart. And in fact, if realized, this will be the second lowest planted area since 2015. You will see expected acreage increases in 9 of the 17 estimating states. Today's cotton planted acreage looks to be somewhat of a surprise, with the NAS estimate falling just above the top range of expectations.
It's Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Omaha cash corn prices were mostly range-bound early in 2026 before a conflict in the Middle East lifted prices to $4.49 per bushel, still 18% below the five-year average.
Low feed costs, tight cold storage, strong exports contributing to sustained favorable margins. Matt Erickson, senior analyst at Terrain.
While soybean meal has firmed modestly, up 10% this year through March, it remains deeply discounted at $333 per ton, which is 13% below the five-year average. Still, producers should consider the risk of feed costs increasing if the conflict in the Middle East continues. As of the end of February, pork stocks totaled 403.5 million pounds, down 0.1% from January and down 5% from 2025 levels. Even so, inventories remain notably constrained at 14.7% below the five-year average. Additionally, February 2026 represents the lowest February pork stocks on record dating back to 1997. The ongoing inventory tightness continues to provide underlying support for pork values heading into the summer grilling season and limits downside risk to prices. After closing 2025 on a strong note, U.S. pork exports got off to a solid start in 2026. Weekly exports from March 6th to March 12th totaled 35,674 metric tons. Shipments ran 9% above year-ago levels and 8% above the five-year average. Pork net sales totaled 28,284 metric tons, rebounding 19% from the previous week and up more than 56% year-over-year, though they remain about 7% below the five-year average. In 2025, export value per head slaughtered averaged $65.76, modestly below 2024's $66.92, but above 2023's $64.14, underscoring the durability of export demand despite shifting global dynamics. Export value per head to Mexico has more than doubled since 2020, rising from $8.89 and reaching $22.35 in 2025, solidifying its position as the largest global destination for U.S. pork. Broader Latin America, excluding Mexico, has emerged as an increasingly important demand base, with export value per head climbing from $8.65 in 2023 to $11.19 in 2025. In contrast, several legacy markets posted declines from 2024 to 2025, including Canada, from $6.69 to $5.94, China, from $8.63 to $6.72, Japan, from $10.71 to $9.68, and South Korea, from $5.64 down to $5.23. Notably, gains from Mexico and Latin America offset roughly 78% of the losses across Canada, China, Japan, and South Korea, highlighting the growing strategic importance of Western Hemisphere demand. With the USDA projecting a 3.1% year-over-year increase in U.S. pork exports in 2026, currency dynamics are also providing meaningful support. A softer dollar helps reinforce U.S. pork's competitive position in global markets and should continue to support export demand as the year progresses. Tariff and trade uncertainties and a recent uptick of the U.S. dollar against some currencies will remain front and center.
It's Agriculture Today.
Introducing the heavyweight champion of the livestock operation, Case IH Farmall Utility Series Tractors.
Farmall Utility Tractors don't just outweigh the competition. They're engineered to distribute weight where it works, from the transmission, central housing, and axles to the differentials and final drives. So add some weight to your operation and go the distance with Farmall Utility Tractors.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
This is Agriculture Today.
In November, the Walnut Board released its 2025 acreage report. While acreage removal was lower than in 2024, walnut removals continue at a steady pace.
Matt Wolf is a specialty crop analyst at Terrain.
With many older walnut orchards in the Central Valley being removed, some growers could be asking themselves whether it makes sense to replant. Like the almond market, the walnut market has experienced a few difficult years. The grower price was the lowest ever recorded in nominal terms in 2022. Since then, it has been on an upward trajectory until the 2025 crop surprised the market by being the second largest on record. Beyond short-term obstacles, the walnut market faces unique structural issues. Older walnut varieties are no longer seen as desirable relative to the Chandler and Howard varieties. This has become clearer as the global market has become more competitive. China and Chile had increased production and taken export share from the U.S. in the global market. Additionally, walnut producers have not been immune from the most common concern among California farmers, the ever-increasing cost of production. The current bout of input inflation has only made this worse. The combination of price pressures and higher costs leads us to our topic of the day, margin and break-even. Specifically, it raises two familiar questions. Number one, how has the break-even year to get a positive return in orchard establishment changed? Number two, what is the break-even price point for existing orchards? Let's start with the break-even year for producers considering planting a new orchard. The assumptions are as follows. Yearly operating costs cited in the UC Davis cost study for the northern San Joaquin Valley in 2017 and inflation adjusted for 2026. A price of $1.20 per in-shell pound for both years. 100 acres of contiguous land with 60 acres planted to walnuts. Yields of 600 in-shell pounds in fourth leaf, 1,200 in-shell pounds in fifth leaf, 2,400 in-shell pounds in sixth leaf, 5,000 in-shell pounds in seventh leaf, and 6,000 onward. Then finally, a 30-year mortgage of 4% in 2017 and 7% in 2026. Given that it takes longer for a walnut orchard than an almond orchard to ramp up yields, the break-even of the farmer's investment in this scenario is not until eighth and ninth leaf, depending on whether the farmer has a mortgage. The equivalent years for almonds were sixth and seventh leaf. Then there are differences in 2017 compared with 2026. Adjusting the 2017 costs for inflation to get an approximation of operating costs in 2026 pushes the break-even year to 13th leaf or 17th leaf, depending on whether the farmer has a mortgage. Like the case of other permanent plantings, this no doubt explains the sharp drop in new plantings in recent years. Once an orchard is established and in full production, the break-even price becomes more relevant than break-even year. Assuming a yield of 6,000 pounds, we can back into break-even price for different years. With operating costs at about $3,808 per acre in 2026, it takes 63 cents per in-shell pound to break even versus 38 cents per in-shell pound in 2017. The point of this analysis is not to give an exact estimate of break-evens. Growers will have different cost structures if they're in the northern, southern, eastern, or western part of the Central Valley. Even within the same county, there can be considerable differences in cost and yield. The analysis is meant to provide an approximation of break-evens and help inform the decisions farmers are faced with every day. Knowing your numbers and comparative advantage can be a powerful tool when making decisions in the field.
It's Agriculture Today.
Let's talk about supply chains. Each year, Cotton Incorporated's global supply chain marketing team has hundreds of meetings with brands and retailers in all corners of the globe. They're working to find innovative ways to replace synthetic fabrics with natural, sustainable cotton to expand your customer base and drive more demand. You grow the cotton. The Cotton Research and Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.